Thank you for tuning in to the Postmodern Realities podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. I'm Melanie Cogdill, Managing Editor of the Christian Research Journal. It's December 2020, and you're listening to episode 214, which is a discussion about the CBS All Access television series Star Trek Discovery and one of its characters, Captain Christopher Pike. On this episode, I'm joined by Cole Burgett, who is a recent seminary graduate and an author for the website Christ and Pop Culture. Cole has written an article for our Postmodern Realities column in the upcoming Volume 43, Number 3 issue of the print edition of the Christian Research Journal, and his article is called Star Trek's Christopher Pike, an Old-Fashioned Hero for Our Cynical Times. And you can read his article when you subscribe to the journal at equip.org. Cole, it's good to have you on.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, as I mentioned, Cole has an article in our new print edition of the Christian Research Journal, which is volume 43, number 3. And so his article, as I said, is about Star Trek. Now, I bet a lot of people are thinking Star Trek and William Shatner and really, you know, the 1960s series, or maybe some of the newer series that came out later. But this is actually taking a really old character from that time and in that he's talking about in his article and then recasting it kind of in the new series that's happening right now on CBS All Access. So Cole has written this article in our Postmodern Realities column for which this podcast is named. And in it, we try to feature younger authors. And by younger, I mean millennials and Gen Z, although I did say in a recent podcast, some millennials are already 40, so they're getting older. But we try to feature younger writers, younger than boomers and Gen Xers, and have them usually talk about mostly kind of cultural apologetic issues as it relates to their generation and also for everybody in the church. So why don't you tell us a little bit about when your first exposure is to Star Trek, since you are a younger person and you probably wasn't watching it on TV in the 1960s.
Right. Well, I more or less grew up with it. I think my very first exposure came by way of The Next Generation. It was the late 80s, early 90s television series starring Patrick Stewart. I can remember watching some of Voyager when it was originally airing, but I didn't really get into the whole universe that is Star Trek until later through DVDs and streaming services, things like that. I've never really been a diehard Trekkie, but I've had friends that are, so most of my continued exposure has really come from them.
So right now there's kind of a revitalization of Star Trek, and you mentioned Patrick Stewart, and no one thought that they could ever convince him to come back into that universe, but of course he has. And for our listeners, we've done a podcast and an article on some of the new content on CBS All Access. And then we will link that in the show notes as well as on our website and in the description of the YouTube video of this audio where you can link to some of our other coverage of Star Trek. But this particular character, Captain Pike, Chris Pike, was in the original series, as I mentioned, very, very early on, and now he's coming back into Star Trek Discovery. And so it's kind of interesting that they kind of put this character back into resurgence. So what compelled you to write this article? Because you're probably more familiar, as you just said, with some of the newer Star Trek series versus the real old ones in the 1960s when he first came into the universe.
Mm-hmm. I guess there were a few factors that went into it. I think my headspace when I wrote the article, it actually had more to do probably with the Westerns. I know that seems pretty far removed from science fiction, but I guess what I correlated was these like old-fashioned hero types. You know, in classic Westerns, good guys and bad guys are pretty clear-cut, which by a lot of modern storytelling standards can seem trite or outdated. And even in the first season of Discovery, which I did enjoy, it played with subverting expectations by giving us these more morally gray characters. So I was pretty surprised with the second season and the introduction of Pike and that character and how his characterization channeled these older, more traditional, almost Western hero archetypes. And that was just something I guess I found compelling enough to write about.
Well, that's really interesting in terms of, like you're saying, Western archetypes. Now, like we just mentioned, you know, he is a classic character. So sometimes it's harder to recast these classic characters because people in their mind have like the particular actor or what they thought about the character when it was originally put into a series. So why do you think in particular that Star Trek Discovery's reimagining of Pike has been, you know, met with success?
Yeah, this is something I've thought a good bit about, and I think a few key factors play into it. Obviously, I guess the writing and character development are probably the two most critical things, but I also think casting. The casting played a large role in it. Casting Anson Mount as Pike was a wise decision. It's a bit of an unexpected choice, but I had watched him on the Western series, actually, Hell on Wheels, which was an AMC show, I think. So again, there's a pretty serious and overt Western connection, even with the choice of actor. And I think he's a pretty versatile actor, and he's pretty good. And I also think the way the writers sort of took a lesser known character's story and really turned what was originally a kind of, I guess, a tragic story or a story with a tragic ending into a pretty powerful redemption story with sacrifice at its core really helped. Those are pretty mythic, even, you know, biblical themes, and it certainly elevates the character from obscurity, and I think that plays a very important role in audience reception.
So, in your article that you focus on Captain Pike, what makes you think that he's different than other pop culture heroes today? I mean, he's definitely different than the anti-heroes, like Deadpool, for sure. But what sets him apart from other pop culture heroes?
Yeah. Well, your biggest pop culture heroes right now are pretty much the, I guess, the comic book heroes. You got guys like Batman or Captain America, something like that. And they're exceptional because they're either the smartest guy in the room or they're the strongest guy in the room, something like that. Pike, however, a little different. You know, Pike doesn't possess superpowers in that respect. He's just a man, a fallible human being who chooses the right thing because it's the right thing, period. That kind of conviction, I think, is rare in characters these days. He also has this ability to kind of admit when he's wrong or is more than willing to hear the opinions of other crew members. And I think that makes him a really good example of just a common person. He's not exceptional in terms of what he can do necessarily, but he is exceptional in who he is as a person. And that speaks to careful and complex writing on the part of the showrunners, I think. And that's really what sets him apart and makes him stand out in a lot of ways.
I do think that having watched this series, at least the first two seasons of the series, is that he does portray, which is goodness, which I think is hard to portray that in film and television. And so that's kind of interesting choices too, especially because you're, you know, it's an actor, you know, that's portraying something that's been written for him. But in the writing, there is a sense of like goodness to him, which I don't think is as portrayed frequently on screen anymore. In other words, we tend to, you know, as audience members and watchers, we tend to root for these bad guys. I mean, I think of like Breaking Bad. Someone might have started out good, and then at the end, we're like really almost fascinated and maybe perhaps rooting for someone who is a truly bad person, has a lot of evil acts that they've done. So how do you find their portrayal of his, a part of him, as good things, good acts that he does?
Yeah, I think you've actually hit on something that's pretty important. You mentioned that it's actually hard to write goodness well. And I think that's a really key insight to have. And I think it's very true. I do think it is actually more difficult to write a truly good character than it is to write something like an anti-hero. And that's not to say that stories with anti-heroes at their center are less than. It's just that to write a character who is consistently good, even narratively, is harder. It's so much easier for a writer, I think, when faced with developing a character, to just say, oh, well, just have him compromise over here to create a conflict that will drive the narrative. than it is to really write a character who consistently does the right thing while still maintaining depth and nuance. I think as a writer, it forces you to press deeper into the character to figure out what makes him or her tick, to figure out their convictions and what drives them. So I think it's a harder thing to do.
You're listening to the Postmodern Realities Podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. Today's guest is Cole Burgett, who has written an article for our Postmodern Realities column in the upcoming Volume 43, Number 3 issue of the print edition of the Christian Research Journal. And Cole's article is called Star Trek's Christopher Pike, an Old-Fashioned Hero for Our Cynical Times. And you can read his article when you subscribe to the journal at equip.org. Now, another way that you can partner with us is for this holiday season to give a gift subscription to the Christian Research Journal, to your pastor, to someone who is a family member or a friend who would appreciate our content. Another way that you can partner with us if a subscription is not in your budget for this month, and that is to just give us a tip for all the content that you can access for free online at our website, equip.org, including helping us to continue this podcast, which we're already over 200 episodes. You can help us by giving us a tip of something like $3, $5, or $10, and you can easily do that at our website, equip.org, if you go to the magazine tab and scroll down to Postmodern Realities Podcast. There's a link that you can do that at any of the landing pages for the podcast. Plus, we also have a link to where you can tip us in the description and show notes below this episode. Now, finally, the best way that you can partner with us is to tell a friend about this podcast. The more that we spread the word about this podcast, the more that we can introduce people to this content as we talk about apologetics and cultural apologetics and Christian living issues. And you can do that by giving us a rating or a review at wherever you get your podcasts, but most particularly at Apple Podcasts. That would be helpful to us. Or you can just share this content on your social media feeds. And thank you and Merry Christmas. Well, we were beginning to unpack a little bit this character, Captain Pike. And so, you know, Star Trek, as anyone knows that's familiar with the work of the original creator, Gene Roddenberry, who wrote these books that were developed into this television series and, of course, movies also, it's been known historically for having very, I guess what we'd say, more progressive ideologies in some sense. In other words, I would characterize them as more humanist and atheist. And of course, we've talked about this. That's why I'd want to encourage our listeners to look at our other content, because we've talked about this before when we've talked about Star Trek or various different parts of that universe. And so, you know, first of all, they cast a lot of actors from diverse backgrounds, which I think is really good. But at the heart of Gene Roddenberry's worldview is that we don't need to conquer things. We can build a utopia in the universe if we can just have understanding between people. So it's very much whether it's an alien race or the humans, although he would probably say ultimately as humans, he wants these people for us to learn these lessons, that people are basically good and we can convince other people to also be good. That's kind of where he's at, and we can all live in harmony. So do you think that, again, because of not just that ideology, which they do, and they've also added in, you know, now into this series, not only LGBTQ actors, but also storylines as well that, you know, were not in the original series. Do you think that the writers are taking maybe a risk by putting this, you know, I don't want to say resurrecting, but bringing back a really, you know, typical quote unquote white male character from the 60s. And now they're creating this, you know, have him as a centerpiece, a male centerpiece, as a protagonist rather, you know, another white male. And he's here and in the middle of the series when they have from the very beginning all the way back to the 60s been really very careful about trying to have a lot of diversity as well as a lot of, you know, diverse views.
Right. Yeah, well, I guess in this cultural climate, anything's a risk these days. You know, I personally don't think the average person cares too much, as we are sometimes maybe told that they do about these sorts of things. I think if writers are committed to telling a compelling story with solid character development, and they leave the cynicism that a lot of modern storytelling is obsessed with at the door, I don't actually think it matters to people who the character is that they're dealing with. So in that respect, I mean, yeah, I guess it is kind of a risk to do it. That being said, the stories that they're telling are very good. And even with the first season of Discovery, I know you said you watched the first one and the second one, you kind of see a contrast. And I thought that was a really, really brilliant way of doing it. And I think even in the early episodes of the second season of Discovery, they acknowledge it. The characters in the universe actually acknowledge what's happening. Where in the first season, you have this very sort of militant, aggressive type leader who's sort of the, I guess, everything wrong with what you would might call, like you said, the quote unquote white male protagonist or white male captain leader type figure. And then Pike is sort of brought into the second season as this guy's antithesis. He's everything that this guy is not. And he's all of these traits done well. And I think that has really resonated with people. As far as I know, it was really sort of fan response that has led to the upcoming spinoff series, which Anson Mount will lead with Spock and number one characters returning for that. So, like I said, I think if the writers are committed to just telling a compelling story with solid character development, I don't think it really matters.
So, you know, currently, culturally, there is a lot of discussion about, you know, quote unquote, traditional masculine or feminine values. You know, do we want to, and by we, I mean culture, do we want to continue to reinforce those things, whether it's through toys that children play because we want things to not be associated with a particular gender? And even for many people in culture, they would even question if there is such a thing as male or female in terms of gender. So, and thus, you know, specific characteristics for those genders. So do you think that these writers are calling into question some of those things? Or do you think they're saying that, hey, it's okay to have this white male protagonist? Are there ways that traditional masculine and feminine characteristics are seen as beneficial and or harmful as they're portrayed specifically in Hollywood? Because, you know, we have to admit it, one of the ways in which America has really influenced the entire world is through entertainment. People all over the world know anything. I mean, there's people, you know, in the Middle East who know who SpongeBob SquarePants is. It's because right. We've exported all of this stuff. So are we trying to shape those kind of views through our media as a culture?
Oh, absolutely. I think it certainly goes both ways. And this is one of the great crises of the early 21st century. For better or for worse, a lot of what you'd call traditional, I guess, values regarding masculinity, femininity, they've come under closer scrutiny. And that's not always a bad thing. That being said, I think we as Christians especially have a responsibility to think about these things clearly and biblically. I don't think it's quite as simple as, well, men do masculine things and women do feminine things, and that's, you know, the be-all, end-all of it. I think that writers like C.S. Lewis and Leanne Payne are really brilliant in showing us that individual people embody both masculine and feminine values, what we would call traditionally masculine, traditionally feminine values. A psychiatrist by the name of Jeffrey Satinover, he has this essay called The True Masculine and the True Feminine. And in this essay, he says it this way: true masculinity is always wedded to true femininity. And I think for men, this means their essential quality of leading is softened by their longing to yield to the needs of others. I'm pretty sure that's how Satinover says it in that essay. And the flip side of that is for women, this means that their essential quality of longing to tend to the needs of others is then strengthened by their ability to point toward the noblest goals. So I don't really see masculinity and femininity as an either-or thing, but a both-and. And someone who balances these things well, I think we would call that person well-adjusted. And to sort of bring this back around, I think Pike is a very good example of a man who embodies both well. He's this captain, he leads his crew, but never at their expense. His leadership is always tempered by his ability to not only hear the opinions of others, but to yield to the opinions of others when theirs is, in fact, the stronger opinion. And even in the context of the show, and this is what I find really, really interesting, even in the context of the show, the characters talk about these traits as the things that make him a good captain, a good leader, and a good man.
So do you think that, as far as Hollywood is concerned, do you think some of these traditionally masculine characters are kind of dying out in our portrayal of them in pop culture? Like, you mentioned earlier just the idea of a Western. So for most of us, even I don't think I've ever seen a John Wayne movie, but that traditional Hollywood John Wayne, you know, showdown at the OK Corral type of a character is part of just, you know, American culture. And so do you feel like there's less of those? Do you see pop culture and there's less of those kinds of heroes and characters these days?
Nowadays, yes. But when it comes to storytelling, nothing ever really goes away. You know what I mean? These things always come back repackaged somehow. I know you and I have talked some. One of the most popular shows on right now is The Mandalorian, which is really just a glorified Western with laser guns. But what you do see, I think, is a very different kind of Western hero archetype that emerges. The Mandalorian is far less John Wayne, to use your example. He's far less John Wayne or Gary Cooper than he is Clint Eastwood, who was brilliant in how he reimagined the Western and the sort of classic cowboy archetype. He took the straight-laced heroic archetype that we sort of associate with John Wayne and Gary Cooper, and he turned it into something like an anti-hero. And it worked. Don't get me wrong, it worked. However, I think we do see less and less of that more original heroic archetype in pop culture today. And I think the reason for that is, as you said earlier, their stories are much harder to tell. It is harder to write a truly heroic character than it is to write a morally compromised or a fatally flawed antihero, because goodness is always the harder thing to do well. This is why nobody can seem to get a Superman adaptation right. It's harder to write truly good men well. It's why we have dozens and dozens of antiheroes in front of us, but you don't really find many characters like, you know, Atticus Finch, from To Kill a Mockingbird, or Will Kane, who was in High Noon. You just don't really find these characters in pop culture anymore.
It seems like that's really true, because, you know, what's being really popular, even at the box office, in terms of numbers, is like Deadpool, and he's a very much of an anti-hero. And I will also link to that. We did do an article about different, you know, anti-heroes, mainly in the Marvel Universe. And I'll have that in the show notes as well. But, you know, as you were mentioning, and you mentioned in your article, that we have this kind of rise of the anti-hero in pop culture right now. And, you know, obviously Pike is somebody super different from those anti-heroes. But why would we want to root for him? Because normally, you know, we're just trying to figure out, oh, what's Walter White going to do next in Breaking Bad? And we like that. Or we just like this idea of, oh, we're rooting for, I always think of, you know, a lot of the new films that are about, you know, bank heists. Well, the main characters were, you know, Ocean 7 or 8, 9, or however many they're up to now, we're just rooting for the bad guys to steal stuff. And so what makes him so compelling as a good guy that we want to root for, as opposed to, hey, you know, let's see what, you know, like I said, Walter White's up to in Breaking Bad.
Yeah, I agree. We are very much in a culture that is obsessed with anti-heroes, or what used to be called Byronic or tragic heroes. And to be completely fair, I don't think this is a new phenomenon. These types of characters, these anti-heroes, they do have their roots in classic mythology. I mean, the Iliad begins with the narrator invoking the goddess to sing about the wrath of Achilles, and the idea being that there's always a character flaw that ultimately becomes a hero's undoing. Achilles had his heel, and his rage blinded him. TV shows like Breaking Bad, you mentioned, or even, from what little I know about it, Game of Thrones, both of which have dominated the zeitgeist in recent years, are full of these types of anti-heroic characters. And something that has sort of interested me as I've studied, you know, mythology, which in a lot of ways does sort of lay the foundation of just Western storytelling in general. What you actually find to be much rarer in even those stories are heroes who are actually the embodiment of the word. People who do selfless things because they are genuinely selfless people and who overcome through sacrifice. Of all the Greek heroes, and I'm thinking, you know, Achilles, as we mentioned, Heracles, Odysseus, you pretty much only have Perseus, who is that truly heroic type of character, the truly selfless kind of hero whose story doesn't end in some kind of, you know, tragedy that's brought about by a dark irony of how they are. In Arthurian legend, you have Galahad, who's like the one knight in Arthur's court who actually is a selfless person, and his story doesn't end, you know, in bloodshed on a battlefield. These types of truly heroic characters are actually few and far between, even in their own stories. And that's where I think Pike sort of comes in as this very different kind of hero, at least in modern culture. It's a character archetype that's been falling from the public conscience. Really, I think with the decline of the Western genre, you really don't find these types of characters outside of the Western genre. And so I do think there are differences, but they both sort of have their roots in mythology.
And, you know, part of what we do on this podcast, especially as we cover pop culture, is to say, well, how is this significant for the Christian, or how should the Christian think about this, either using it in apologetics or to understand our culture better, to be able to reach out to people? And I do think there's some dissonance for Christians as we, you know, have seen the rise of the anti-hero. For example, I watched The Americans and fast forward through some of their really troubling stuff, but, you know, watch The Americans, and there's so much dissonance in me trying to, why am I rooting for the Soviets? I mean, literally, you find yourself, you get so wedded to these characters, and you're like, well, I hope the CIA doesn't find them because they're the bad guys. You know what I mean? Or it starts kind of making that moral gray area. Well, are the CIA really the good guys? Could the Soviets also be good guys? I mean, who are the good and bad guys? And I think that's what's happened with this anti-hero. It's become so gray. You don't know, you know, in talking about portraying goodness, maybe you don't even know what goodness is anymore, because you just see, hey, there's bad guys, but maybe the quote unquote good guys are bad.
Yeah, you're aiming, I think, in the right direction, or the scary direction of where things go. And as Christians, we do have to sort of ask these questions. And I think you want to get down to brass tacks. I mean, Star Trek has always kind of been one of those shows that, you know, I think kids sort of, you grow up on it. All of my friends who are diehard Trekkies grew up with it. You know, Discovery is one of those shows that I don't know that I would be comfortable telling someone, hey, let your kid watch this, even though it has this really great character in it. You do have to kind of wrestle with, what is the story? What is the plot doing that sort of tells us how the writers are thinking about this and the point they're making through what they're saying, what the characters say, and what they're doing? And the question that you raised, I think, is the question that we have to ask, because I think it's what we are sort of in danger of in this culture, where we are obsessed with anti-heroes who do serve a purpose, so long as we don't come to see what they're doing as good. That's the tension, and that's the thing we have to, I think, talk about, and as Christians, think very seriously about. It's a very compelling thing to watch characters sort of waffle between right and wrong, good and bad. But when the narrative of the show, or the book, or whatever it is, when the narrative of the story loses focus on what's good, you know, we're suddenly having to ask whether or not they even know what's good anymore. And if we take away that, you know, if we, the irony with the anti-hero is that you're not supposed to agree with what they do in the end. They're supposed to be lessons to us, right? The whole point of Achilles' story is, you know, yeah, he was a great heroic figure, but his rage is what undid him. Don't be like Achilles and his rage. That's sort of the way the narrative teases that out. And when you lose sight of that, or if you really run the risk of what we do in our culture, you mentioned Deadpool, and this is sort of my, I don't want to say gripe because that's not really what it is, but my concern with those types of films, those types of characters, is when I have conversations with my friends who go and watch these movies, and they walk away sort of, in a sense, celebrating the character. And I'm going, well, I don't know that that's the point of the story you've watched. I don't know if that's the point of the character to be celebrated. Maybe the character is a warning, is telling you what not to be, but it's very easy to confuse those things.
So in your article, you draw this connection between Captain Pike's story in Discovery and kind of him as like a Christ-like figure. And so do you think, I mean, I have a hard time believing that it was intentional on the part of the show's writers, because I don't really think that many of them, I don't want to make a blanket statement that most people in Hollywood haven't read the Bible, but there's probably a good majority of them that haven't. So do you think it was intentional where there's these very clear kind of like Christ-like moments in mm-hmm. the series?
Yeah, to a degree, yes. But I want to say that I do agree with you wholeheartedly. I do think these things sort of come out unintentionally. And I don't know that we can ever actually gauge which is what or what degree that is. But I think to a degree is some of it intentional, at least with Pike and the way the plot sort of unfurls regarding his character. Yeah, I think the episode where he actually makes his big sacrificial decision, I think it's actually titled Through the Valley of Shadows, which is a very obvious nod to Psalm 23:4. So here's how I'll say this when I say I think it's intentional. What I mean by that is I think the show's writers probably understand the power of the imagery and the symbolism. They understand the power of sacrifice, which is just good storytelling, right? That's a mythic theme. It's a biblical theme. It grabs people in all the right ways. And I think they understand that. I don't think they sit there and draw one-to-one parallels between, you know, Christopher Pike and Jesus Christ. But I do think they understand the power of the imagery and the power of that type of story. And I think that's probably what they employed. But again, I'm like you. I don't want to make blanket statements.
And I would say too that, I mean, this is another conversation, but you know, when you think of the works of Tolkien, his Christian worldview came out very clearly in it, and it has a huge impact in culture. And it could be that unknowing to them that they recall some of this imagery, which is very clear with biblical weight in terms of prophet, priest, and king, as we look in those themes within Tolkien's work, specifically Lord of the Rings. And so maybe they recall, well, I'm remembering Tolkien, it was kind of this, I don't know, I don't want to read into it, but I'm just saying there are Christian artists who have, their worldview has so naturally come through their work that we've seen some of these types of representations in pop culture in terms of other shows or books even.
Yeah. Yeah. You push it far enough. And like you said, it's almost a different conversation altogether, but it's a very fascinating conversation and an important conversation. And the words you used were read into, and that's the danger, right? You sit and it's almost like playing with fire. You don't want to read too much into something. But I think the question that we almost have to ask is, well, what do we get out of it? If we're not reading into it, if we just follow the narrative, what is the narrative itself saying? And I think you're absolutely right. They sort of, even maybe unintentionally or even unknowingly, they catch the power of the story, of that type of story, of the imagery. And it does come out. I know C.S. Lewis talks, for the life of me right now, I'm trying to do this off the cuff. I can't remember where he talks about this. I wish I could. But he does talk about how these things do sort of come out, however unintentionally, in the writing. And so I think you're very right.
Well, in your article, you also talk about the dangers of sentimentality. And so I also want to say, as we think about masculinity and femininity, and specifically for Christians, as they think about those in a biblical sense, we don't want to take a cultural view of what those are, not a biblical view, and say, oh, that's what defines, right, somebody who's masculine. And I think of that because it's December, as I mentioned in my intro. And just so people know, although we did get a lot of negative comments too, that they didn't agree with us, but last December we covered Hallmark Christmas movies and should Christians be watching them? Two of us, two women, we talked about it. And in those, I would say, as you know, just to have people press into that, is it does give, speaking of white male and white men and women, not just that, but just putting out there a cultural stereotype of masculinity that might not be biblical, or that is not biblical. And that includes even when we talk about, you know, quote unquote, white male characters that are sentimental. I tend to think of those 1960s, or I'm not sure when they were on, like Leave It to Beaver kind of, you know, or, you know, My Four Sons or whatever that was. I didn't watch any of those shows, so I might not be remembered the titles exactly. My Three Sons, I think, that we don't want to say, oh, just how people portrayed men in the 1950s in pop culture is biblical. So we don't want to be in that. But at the same time, we want to definitely promote what the Bible does teach about biblical maleness and biblical femaleness, because the Bible definitely teaches that there are specific genders and there aren't multiple genders. But again, that's a different conversation. So can you define sentimentality as you talk about it and the dangers of it in your article? And why does that make it problematic for pop culture, or just our culture in general?
Yeah, this is a really interesting question, because we've talked, and I've sort of, you know, harped on the anti-hero and how those characters are easier to write and all of that. Well, there is a flip side to the coin, which is why, and this, I think, is the thing that makes writing a good character difficult. This is why it's so hard. We've talked about what makes it easier. This is what makes it difficult. When writing a truly good character like Pike, the tendency, and we see this by and large in examples that you have given, and I think they're solid examples, and I'm glad that you guys are having these conversations, because I think they have to be had. The tendency is always to fumble over into sentimentality. Now, as far as a definition of this, sentimentality is, I have one good friend who calls it it's the syruping up of truth. I always thought that was a funny way of expressing that, but I love it. It's the syruping up of truth, or the trading on emotion for the sake of emotion. It is the thing, I know you said you guys did the Hallmark movie talk, and that's sort of the easiest thing to point to. It's the thing that Hallmark movies and Thomas Kinkade paintings capitalize on.
That's probably true.
Yeah, it's the thing that they capitalize on. I know that nostalgia sort of plays a role in that. Nostalgia isn't all that bad. And, you know, there are times when sentimentality is I guess, okay. But by and large, it's the thing they capitalize on. It's what I call the Disney-fied version of life, or the Christian life, that has no real grounding in reality. And it can become problematic. There's a very fine line between charming, something like, you know, one person might define, call Leave It to Beaver, to use the show you gave the example to, it's a very charming show. Well, there's a very fine line between charming, which is something that is done with, you know, that's good natured, and then sentimental, which is sort of careless and a caricature of itself. And it's very superficial. It's very what you might call fake. And this is what, actually, I think the anti-hero tends to be a reaction against. And again, I'll use the Western, since we've sort of weaved that through this whole thing as a common thread. Part of what made, I think, as I mentioned, Clint Eastwood's revisioning of the cowboy archetype as an anti-hero so striking is because of what you just talked about. By the time those shows had gotten into the 1960s and 70s, which I think is right around the time Eastwood really started to break out of his mold and do his own thing with the genre, the cowboy character had become a caricature of himself. He would do the right thing, but there was absolutely no complexity to his character. There was no fallibility. There was no reality to it. And I think it would have been very easy to write Pike in this way, to make him infallible, to not show him as even fearful of the choices he has to make. But instead, you know, bless him, Pike, the writers show Pike to be a very complex character. He's a very smartly written character who embodies the paradox of what it means to be human. I mean, he's brave, yet he is afraid. He is sure of himself, yet he doubts his decisions. And he still makes the selfless choice in the end. So I think sentimentality is the easy way out when trying to write a truly good character. It's the thing that sort of can slip in when a writer's not paying close attention and mess everything up and create a two-dimensional character who has absolutely no life in him whatsoever.
So I want to just kind of end our conversation a little bit by asking you about, you know, you mentioned in your article that Captain Pike's character channeled these old-fashioned heroes. So are there other characters who stand in this tradition that, you know, are this kind of old-fashioned archetype hero? And then the other question that I want to ask you, you just mentioned for kids, but do you think Christians in general should watch Discovery or should they maybe pass?
Great question. Okay, so to start, I'll answer the first of some other characters we've seen. I think I mentioned this already, the character of Will Kane, played by Gary Cooper in the 1952 Western High Noon. That's one good example. Atticus Finch from the novel To Kill a Mockingbird, played by Gregory Peck in the 1962 film adaptation. As far as modern heroes go, I actually think the character of Rey in the recent Star Wars films does this very well, as did Leia Organa, played by Carrie Fisher in the original trilogy. As far as, I guess, comic books go, Superman tends to do this well. Superman just sort of depends on the writer. You get a solid enough writer in the comic books, and he does this well. And as far as superheroes go, I know that Marvel is sort of the craze right now. But in terms of a character who is really, really embodying these traits well, I think the 2017 film Wonder Woman does this incredibly well. I have a deep and abiding affection for that film and that character. As far as should Christians watch Discovery, you know, I think it's kind of a tough question. Well, let me rephrase that. I think it's an easy question with a sort of a tough way to wrestle through it for people, for individuals. And what I mean is, if you're a Star Trek fan who happens to be a Christian, yeah, I think you can watch it and enjoy it as a fan of Star Trek, and that's pretty much it. Do I think Christians who have no interest in it go out of their way to watch it? No, I don't. There are certainly things in the show, be it language or even like you mentioned it earlier on, they've brought in some more, you know, LGBTQ-friendly storylines, things like that. So I would say that needs to be left up to individual discretion. But do I think Christians can watch Discovery and get something out of it? Yeah, absolutely. Star Trek is always a show, even since its inception, that's kind of been on the front lines of new and what you might call innovative storytelling. It wrapped up in like a pulp fiction package. So in that respect, yeah, I think it's something that can and probably should be paid attention to.
Well, finally, I have some fun rapid fire questions for Cole. And first of all, it's almost Christmas. So what's your favorite dessert at Christmas time for Christmas dinner?
My favorite dessert at Christmas time is pretty much my favorite dessert year round, which is ice cream cake. I can eat ice cream cake anytime.
Do you eat that for your Christmas dinner with your family? Ice cream cake? That seems very non-traditional.
For the past couple of years, I've worked through Christmas, unfortunately, but I tend to have an ice cream cake somewhere around the holidays, yeah.
Wow, that's very different. Okay, so are you an introvert or extrovert?
It depends on my mood and the side of the bed that I wake up on. Some days I'm more introverted, other days I'm more extroverted.
Early bird or night owl?
Night owl, definitely.
And do you make a Christmas gift list for family and friends?
I have in the past. Over time, I've sort of stopped doing it, and I just kind of go with something I see that makes me think of that person. Do it that way.
Well, how about yourself? Do you make a Christmas gift list for yourself, for family and friends, or do you let them get you whatever?
No, I let them surprise me.
Well, thanks, Cole, for being on the Postmodern Realities podcast.
Well, thank you for having me. I really, really appreciate it.
You've been listening to the Postmodern Realities podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. Today's guest has been Cole Burgett, who has written an article for a Postmodern Realities column in the upcoming print edition of the Christian Research Journal, which is volume 43, number 3. His article is called Star Trek's Christopher Pike an old-fashioned hero for our cynical times. And you can read the article when you subscribe to the journal at equip.org. We'd like to hear from you, so connect with us on social media. Like the Bible Answer Man Facebook page and follow CRI, Christian Research Journal, Hank Anagraph, and the Bible Answer Man on Twitter. And please subscribe to the Bible Answer Man channel on YouTube. If you like this episode, please subscribe to the Postmodern Realities podcast on iTunes, and please rate and review our podcast. When you rate and review our podcast, it helps others see our content. And please share this episode on your social media accounts. Be sure you tune in daily to the Bible Answer Man broadcast, hosted by CRI President Hank Anagraph, who answers your questions live on air. To ask Hank a question, call 888-ASK-HANK, Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. In addition, head to iTunes and subscribe to Hank Unplugged, Hank's audio podcast. Follow Hank off the grid, where he has in-depth conversations with some of the brightest minds discussing topics you care about. So until our next Christian Research Journal author conversation, thanks for listening to the Postmodern Realities podcast.